Okay, now we can start.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
If you build it, they will come. Joel, seen that movie? He's in the movie, Joe.
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
In our 670 of the Score studios, Jordan Malley.
Shout out to Jordan Malley.
Did Matt Peck get a signed copy of that book?
No, Matt Peck, he didn't. No. I'll talk to D. Rose.
Yeah, he's going to make Matt, it happen.
Matt, you will be getting your book soon.
Kick back and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
And so all I was saying on this podcast, the Locked On Bulls podcast.
Locked On Bulls, 5 days a week.
Locked On Bulls starts now.
You can just see the vibe.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Drop your text, your voicemails, anything you got for us. We are going to do mailbag tomorrow, so you want to jump on. Have your voicemail played or your question answered? Hit us up there, 331-979-1369. Or you can always tweet at us at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Matt, welcome back. Happy Tuesday to you. Some very, very, very exciting news for Bulls fans, and I think for NBA fans in general. And we are finally getting a pushed update for the 98 ESPN 30 for 30, 10-part series, April 19th. How pumped are you?
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? I could not be more excited about this, man. I love that we got the news as the Bulls-Knicks rewind on NBC Sports Chicago was wrapping up. It was Game 5. The Bulls knock out the Knicks in five games to advance to the conference finals. A really enjoyable game, and this was just like the greatest news that you could possibly. It was like the cherry on top of a wonderful throwback Bulls evening, because we like got a little bit of a tease. If you remember, they started, you know, really ramping up the frequency of airing the promo for that doc on ESPN's various channels, and they changed the ending of it from saying coming in June to coming soon. So everybody flipped out and was like, oh my God, they're totally going to push it up because of the lack of sports. And then ESPN basically issued a statement saying, no, we're not, because it's not done yet. So it was sort of like a false alarm. But I, you know, for whatever reason, maybe they decided that they really needed to finish it, or maybe they were really trying to hold out until June, and that it was a lie that it wasn't finished. Because you, I don't know if you saw, but it was like LeBron James and Richard Jefferson were having a conversation on, I think, Jefferson's podcast. And he was talking about like, hey, you know, maybe ESPN doesn't want me saying this, but like, it's done. Like, the doc is done. They got to release it.
Wow, I didn't see that.
I don't know how it happened this way. I just love the fact that it's happening.
Man, I was getting goosebumps. Woj tweeted out a promo video, and all the promo videos that you're seeing, I was too young to really remember this, and even people that were probably 5, 8, 10 years old don't really remember all the storylines that go behind it. But dude, I mean, the 90s Bulls, and we'll find out more throughout this 10-part series, but those dudes were fucking rock stars. I mean, you just look at those, look at that 2-minute promo video, all those celebrities, all the stars that were talking to Michael, to Scottie, to Dennis Rodman. I mean, these, it's crazy. Those dudes were fucking superstars in the city for a decade. And they continue to be talked about here in Chicago. I mean, listen to Matt and I talk once a week. We probably mention Jordan on a weekly basis, or that 90s team on a weekly basis. But I had to play the Alan Parsons Project because it was getting me hyped behind all of those videos. So yes, April 19th, two episodes there, and then they're going to extend it out over a 5-week period, which I think is a good idea. I mean, to binge watch that, I feel like everybody would talk about it for 2 weeks and then everybody kind of forget it. This gives us an avenue to kind of stay with it, something current, something we all can watch over the course of almost 2 months. So should be very, very exciting, and very glad that they're doing two episodes.
Yeah, I think they knew to pick the sweet spot of doing two episodes a night every Sunday for 5 Sundays, because I know I would have nowhere close to the level of patience required to wait this out through 10 weeks. I mean, even thinking about just like TV shows, like, you know, some of HBO's popular shows, especially most recently, like Game of Thrones, like waiting all week for a fresh Sunday and a fresh episode. It would be agonizing. And I think with this, they understood that they had to keep some kind of, you know, they had to keep some kind of power and authority over, okay, obviously we're going to make a lot of money compared to what we're struggling with right now, getting ads, you know, getting commercial revenue when there are no actual live sports. But this is going to be a big draw ratings wise. So we can't give everybody the entire thing at once. We have to dole it out. But it's a good middle ground, I think, to say, okay, we're going to give y'all 2 hours of content each Sunday night over 5 weeks. And then, you know, a lot of people on Twitter had already been asking, for those who maybe don't have ESPN Plus or have cable and ESPN, especially some of those, you know, international Bulls fans, is there a way that we can see this? And the answer is yes. For people outside the U.S., they are also partnering, ESPN is partnering with Netflix, and they are going to, I think, essentially exactly like the broadcast schedule here in the States, release it 2 episodes at a time on Netflix.
Oh, that is good for them. I was going to say, because there's a way to kind of get around it. You could get a VPN and put your location in America and buy Hulu for $12.99. And you also get ESPN Plus for a year with that. So you could essentially do that if your country is blocking it. Just get a VPN, locate yourself here in America, and you'll be able to watch it if you want to watch it live. But that's awesome. Good on them, because I know that once they had released ESPN Plus, they had pulled all of the ESPN 30 for 30s from Netflix and put them on their own platform. So if you do have Hulu right now and you're paying $12.99, you actually have ESPN Plus and probably don't even know it. You probably already have Disney Plus for a year too. So if you're paying that already right now, you should go back and check that if you don't know. But yes, very, very, very excited for this. Matt, there was also one other small update as far as content going out there from NBA players. They've decided to put together a 2K tournament where NBA players are going to play each other live on stream and hold some type of, I don't know if they're going to do like a bracket style tournament or they're going to do a round robin type of league or what it is, but it's going to be televised nationally, so we'll be able to watch it on TV, and that should bring up some pretty interesting conversations. And now I don't know if they're going to televise every single game or if they're just going to allow them to televise games that have more prominent players in them, and then the other ones are going to be on a stream. But I'm excited for those conversations too, because I bet you we're going to get a lot of stories we don't normally hear from those guys.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think what I saw is that there's going to be like one representative from each of the 30 teams, so it'll be like a 30 player NBA 2K tournament, I think. And I mean, I don't know if we've gotten any word yet who it might be for the Bulls. I know that there's, you know, some talk about Zach LaVine and his love of gaming. I think he recently started his own Twitch channel in addition to all of the other things he's trying to do to keep himself entertained. But I don't know about you. I used to play a fair amount of 2K when I was younger, you know, college kid, had time, had, you know, the desire to play hours upon hours of video games. I used to play a lot of NBA 2K, especially 2K11, where Derrick Rose was just like invincible. I loved NBA 2K11. And that was also the one that had like the MJ career mode, if you remember, where you could like go and try to hit all of the iconic MJ moments. Yes. Or have all the iconic MJ games. So between that and how good D Rose was in NBA 2K11, I love playing that. But, you know, that was almost, a decade ago now. I don't play it that often anymore, but I think even for those who aren't hard NBA 2K gamers, this will still be a really entertaining thing for NBA fans who miss, among actually watching basketball, just seeing the level of connectivity and interaction among the bright, likable stars in the league, because we're not getting out on the court right now. But if we can get that with them in isolated booths playing NBA 2K, but having each other on headsets and talking trash and jawing at each other and cracking jokes, I mean, at least that will be a return of some normalcy for NBA fans who miss that element of it.
Totally agree. I mean, I'm still playing 2K on a daily basis. I'm completely and utterly addicted to it. When I'm not doing the podcast here, I'm not at the radio station, that has pretty much consumed a lot of my time right now. I'm a big My Team guy. So that is like you collect these cards and you can place them in your lineup, and each player is a card and a value. Sort of like Ultimate Team, if you play Ultimate Team for FIFA or anything on the EA platforms. Very, very fun, very time consuming though. And it's awesome because in those My Team packs, they include old cards like you were talking about. Like there is a 2011 MVP Derrick Rose card that is a 97, and there's also one that's a 99. So you get to play with all these old players and mix your lineups up together. And 2K's done a really, really good job with all of their with all their game modes and everything you can do. I mean, you can consume yourself for, I don't know, 10, 12 hours a day and not be bored. So I'm very excited for it. I think Karl Anthony Towns is going to be the low-key winner of all this. He's the one that's like the biggest gamer, I feel like, in the entire NBA. I remember Zach LaVine, when he first came to Chicago, he talked about him and Karl Anthony Towns constantly gaming together, playing. I think they were playing Call of Duty 4 or Call of Duty 5 was the big one when he was drafted. But he said that that's how they would connect when they weren't together on the floor. They'd be live streaming, they'd be playing video games. So kind of makes sense, but I'm excited. I think it's going to be, you know, if you don't want to watch a simulation of a 2K game, at least this gives you an option to watch two players interact with each other and have some type of competition. So I think it's a very, very creative idea, and I'm definitely looking forward to it.
And Jordan, before we get to our player evaluation part of today's show with Daniel Gafford, speaking of ways to keep ourselves entertained and a little bit of competition, we have some fresh words from our friends at MyBookie. Sports have come to a screeching halt with basketball benched, pitchers off the mound, but our friends at MyBookie aren't going to let it get you down. Stay sane and stay entertained with access to your favorite games like blackjack, roulette, slots, war, and more. Doesn't matter whether you're out on the front lines or quarantined at home, the fun doesn't have to come to an end. Now with MyBookie. Video poker, not your thing, but you still need a fix. They've got you covered with a host of live casino dealers online. That's right. They have professional dealers at their tables live on site 24/7. Your favorite squad sideline because of the pandemic? Don't sweat it. MyBookie has partnered with some of the leading esports brands to bring you wagers on virtual action straight from the court in NBA 2K20. Plus, you can always do your part to make your bankroll great again by taking advantage of shifting odds on political bets. You can trust the industry leaders in times like these. They're reliable, upright, and best of all, they pay fast when you win. Jordan, I think you said tonight there is a simulation between Bulls and Rockets where the Rockets are giving the Bulls, what, like 16 and a half?
Correct. Yeah, 16 and a half, 8.5 in the first half.
Let's throw some money on that. Visit mybookie.ag and use promo code LOCKEDONNBA for a 150% bonus on your first casino deposit. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA to receive a 150% cash bonus on your first deposit, and you can claim those extra funds all the way up to $750. Promo code LOCKEDONNBA. You spin, you win, you get paid.
So with Daniel Gafford, this is going to be part four of our player season reviews. And yesterday's episode, we went through three different players, the end of the bench. We went through Cristiano Felicio, Adam Akoka, talked a little bit about the two-way contracts that could be used, and also talked about Shaq Harrison. Denzel Valentine kind of bled into that conversation as well, but we'll get to a player review on him later, either this week, next week, or the following week after that. But we wanted to go with the second rookie from this team and the second round pick, number 38 overall, in Daniel Gafford this year. And a little quick stat breakdown before we start talking about general things, Matt. Daniel Gafford played in 43 games. He started in 7, averaged 14.2 minutes per game, averaged just above 3 shots a game. He shot 70.1% from the field. On an average of 5.1 points per game, 2.5 rebounds, 0.5 assists, 0.3 steals, 1.3 blocks per game. And that kind of rounds it out, honestly. Daniel Gafford, as far as the stats go, it doesn't pop off the page, just considering how much time he had played and the minutes he was getting. But it certainly showed up when he was able to stay healthy, and he did have a stint where he was injured. When he was able to stay healthy and in the minutes that he was on the floor, I'm just looking at his offense and defensive rating, and they're through the roof. But again, small sample size at 14 minutes per game. Were you impressed by the second round draft pick from the Bulls? And did it lead to your expectations being met, exceeded, or disappointed by Gafford this year, Matt?
I would just say circumstantially that my expectations were exceeded, because when you looked at the returning talent in the Bulls front court, especially these foundational pieces like Lowry and Wendell. And then you have the addition of the veteran presence like Thad Young. You add Luke Kornet as a three-point shooting, you know, floor-stretching big who can also do some decent shot blocking on the defensive end. You just looked at that depth and thought, well, how is the second-round draft pick rookie going to get any playing time? How is he going to see any action? Assuming that among that front court, he would be fifth in the rotation of just front court pieces. So I thought he was going to spend a fair amount of time with the Windy City Bulls and not a whole lot of time with the active Bulls roster. And earlier on this season, he didn't get much run, and he was playing behind all of those pieces who were healthy. And even though we really saw Kornet struggling early this season, Boylan continued to give him minutes, despite the fact that Kornet clearly was a liability on the defensive end, not necessarily to his fault, but because of the system that Boylan insisted on playing. And he was trying to have, you know, Kornet trap guys play perimeter defense, and the Bulls were just getting grossly exposed every night. So Kornet looked bad, but Boylan stuck with him. And then finally, I want to say it was a game against the Bucks, right? You know, maybe a month or so into the season, maybe even more than a month into the season, when Gafford got his first real run, and he was like the game's leading scorer at halftime. And then, of course, in that game, a game in which the Bulls were in it with their Central Division rival, division-leading Milwaukee Bucks, and the reigning MVP Giannis, Bulls have a chance to win that game. Gafford is nowhere to be seen in the fourth quarter, and Bulls fans are wondering, well, what the hell? We just saw the second-round rookie kid play amazingly well in the first half in his first real run of the season, and then he disappears. So I think that was frustrating for a lot of us who were wondering, well, look how good this kid might be. Why is he not getting playing time? So he exceeded my expectations, but I wished I had seen more from him.
I would say the same thing. And, you know, it's unlucky in classic Bulls fashion, unlucky. The first practice of the season going into training camp, Daniel Gafford hyperextended his elbow and Wendell Carter rolls his ankle. So that's part of the reason why we didn't see him early on in the season. He missed 9 of the first 13 games of the season. And then that Milwaukee game that you're talking about was November 18th. And believe it or not, that was the first time Daniel Gafford shot a shot as a player. He played in 4 games, but didn't take a single shot. He played 20 minutes in that game. He was 10 for 12, and he scored a season-high 21 points. So how about that for a start of your NBA career? You hit your season-high in the very first game against the Milwaukee Bucks. But I agree. I think he exceeded my expectations. You kind of hit it on the head, everything that I was going to say. I expected him to be in the G League. You know, you and I were expecting this team to be plenty healthy, plenty of depth, especially behind Carter, especially behind Markkanen, even with Cristiano Felicio taking up a roster spot. I felt like to get Gafford to the point where the Bulls could actually use him and play him a lot was sending him down to the G League, getting him some more run. That obviously didn't happen because the Bulls dwindled with injuries and they actually needed Gafford to play. But there was other games, like the game against Toronto. I mean, look at every game that he played up against a contender. He was playing really, really well. He scored 14 points in that game on December 9th. So there's instances where we saw flashes of good things from Daniel Gafford. I just love the way he's able to run the floor. You can throw him up a lob and he'll catch it. I mean, the ball could be lobbed above the backboard and Daniel Gafford go up and get it. So that makes me really excited for somebody that we haven't seen in a very long time here in Chicago. A guy that can just jump out of the gym, a big man, especially like Gafford, and just throw down hammer dunks like he's able to do. And also his rim protection too. I think that's only going to get better with size, him building up his body a little bit more. I only think that's going to get better over time. But what would you say Daniel Gafford's ceiling is after watching him for 1 year? Do you think he is a legit rotation guy, can be a second center off the bench, or do you think he could potentially be more than that?
I think because I myself was underwhelmed by Wendell this year, and I think I'm not alone in that department, I wanted to feel like Gafford's ceiling was suddenly just like higher by comparison, because like I feel like a lot of Bulls fans were doing that all season long. They were looking at Gafford, they were looking at Wendell and saying, all right, which one of these guys actually has the higher ceiling? Because athletically, Gafford's doing things that we've never seen Wendell be able to do. he's fairly basic with his offensive contributions. He doesn't have any semblance of an outside game like we've seen at least glimpses of from Wendell. But Gafford looks to be stronger in the pick and roll game. He's better at finishing through traffic. He's better playing above the rim. He's obviously got the size advantage over Wendell. And all of a sudden, people kept saying, "Oh, well, is Gafford better than Wendell Carter Jr.?" Even though he's a second round pick and Wendell was the seventh overall, I think it's risky to start saying that Gafford's better than Wendell. And when you talk about what his ceiling might be, let's remember that Wendell, despite being in this league for two seasons already compared to Gafford's one, is younger than Gafford considerably. Gafford's 21 and a half years old as of today. Wendell came into this league as a 19-year-old rookie. I think when you look about where he was drafted as a second-round pick, Gafford can end up, and I would say likely will end up, exceeding expectations based on where he was drafted. And whether that's a middling to end-of-the-pack starting caliber center in this league or a quality reserve center in this league, either way, if that's a piece that sticks around for this Bulls team for the next several seasons, they got good value.
I totally agree with you. And, you know, we talked about it when the Bulls initially drafted him. You know, he was supposed to be a first-round pick, not last year, but the year before that, and he decided to go back to Arkansas for another year to try and develop his game after coming down with an injury late in that first season where he felt like maybe my value as far as draft stock would go down. He was talked about in a lot of circles his very, you know, that first year where he was supposed to come out of the draft as a potential mid-teens type of pick in the first round. So I feel like the Bulls got a steal on him too. And, you know, to ask to put your ceiling very high on second round picks, I think is just doing a disservice to yourself. But with Gafford, I feel like this was such good value. And for whatever reason, the Bulls are able to find guys in the second round that end up becoming pieces that are worthy of keeping around for a long time. So this could be a diamond in a rough again. I think the one thing that I'd like to see Daniel Gafford improve on, he's very good around the rim, but rebounding is going to be an issue. And maybe that's more of, he just needs to bulk up, get a little bit more size. I think rebounding could be something that could make or break Daniel Gafford as a key part of what the Bulls are trying to build, whatever they're trying to build over the next 3 or 4 years. If you got a solid, reliable guy that can come off the bench for 20, 25 minutes a game and do the things he can do, have the athleticism that he has and be able to block shots, if he can rebound for you in that second unit, especially if you're going to go smaller with that second unit, he can be a really, really valuable piece. But I'm with you too. I think it's way, 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 way too early to say Gafford's better than Carter, because consider all the injuries Carter has gone through so far these two first seasons that he's had in the NBA. On top of that too, Carter's got his own issues where he gets into foul trouble. His teammates lead him into foul trouble a lot. It seems like he had a lot of frustrations with that too. So I would say it's definitely way too early. I think Carter's got a way better shot. He's got a way better, more polished offensive game than Gafford does right now. But we'll see, I guess. If Daniel Gafford becomes a rotation second unit center for this Bulls team over the next 5-6 years, I am completely happy, and that's more than worth a second round pick.
I think so too. I would say, yeah, I mean, the issues where Bulls fans would hope that he continues to develop, obviously foul trouble was big for him this year. Foul trouble was big for Wendell his rookie year too. And again, some of that, I think, was on largely the defensive system the Bulls were running, because with asking bigs to guard around the perimeter, they get in foul trouble more quickly and more easily. With a number of lineups that Boylan has out there where he's playing small ball, he's playing four guard lineups with one big, and some of that was because of injuries. So, like, when Gafford started to get run, it's because Lowry was hurt, Wendell was hurt, Cornett was hurt. So a lot of these times you saw Gafford playing out there with four guards, and it's something that most of the bigs on this Bulls team experienced this season. And guess what? When you're playing that trap defense, that blitz defense, and a competent offense breaks it down by making, you know, an adequate number of passes, if they're not out guarding at the perimeter, the center who is actually protecting the rim is screwed. Like they just, you know, it's either they give up a dunk and or a layup, or they commit a foul. So I think that was part of the problem with Gafford and his foul trouble. But he's still, I think, one area where you say Wendell is vastly superior right now is the defensive awareness and the defensive IQ that Wendell has that Gafford does not. So some of it, and you know, of course, officiating being hard on young players, especially young bigs, they barely ever get benefit of the doubt from the refs. So that's a factor too. And then the other thing offensively that you hope that he does is improve upon the versatility of his game. You know, he sets screens and he rolls to the rim. And if he gets a decent lob or a decent entry pass, he can finish. We saw plenty of examples of that, but that's it. So is he going to work on some kind of mid-range shot this summer? Will he be allowed to take a mid-range shot if he develops one? Will he try to bring his game outside the three-point line? I don't think that last one is likely. But even like Taj Gibson developing a reliable 15 to 17 footer as he progressed as a young player in the NBA who was mostly known for his athleticism and his defense out of the gate, like Gafford has been, he developed a decent offensive game. Took him a while, but he developed one. So that's what I want to see from Gafford moving forward.
Agreed. And you've got two guys to dedicate time and learn stuff from too. And, you know, Markkanen's a decent, he was supposed to be one of our best shooters. We haven't seen that consistently, but, you know, Markkanen can drop down a shot. So learn a little bit from Markkanen and maybe learn a little bit from Carter too. Carter's got a handful of nice post moves too that maybe Gafford can pick up on. Just going back really quick to Gafford's foul trouble, we had either five or six fouls in 20% of the games that he played in this year. So that's not very good considering you fouled out of four games and you had five fouls in the other four games. And then he had four fouls in three other games. So you could be looking at almost 30% of the games he was in foul trouble. The one that sticks out to me the most from this season was the Brooklyn game where he was just getting absolutely destroyed by Jared Allen off the bench. They had DeAndre Jordan starting, and you could tell there was some clear frustration. And also, too, that Brooklyn Nets game, I should say this, too. Brooklyn Nets game was bad officiating. It was one of those games where it felt like every set on the half court, there was a foul or there was a whistle and there was stoppage of play, but that's what I would like to see. And maybe like you were talking about, maybe Boylan's system wasn't advantageous for the bigs either and was kind of hanging them out to dry. When you would blitz the guys and the guys would be able to get past those two defenders, you're leaving Gafford and Carter down low in front of the rim to either foul, block the shot, or make a defensive stop. And, you know, we're seeing that kind of get exposed with younger players as guys don't have the ability to not foul. And Carter has a huge trouble with that. We were seeing Gafford have a decent problem with that last year, too. Matt, I wanted to get into some player comps real quick before we end Daniel Gafford's season in review. So I was trying to dig for player comps throughout the season and also right around the draft. And I came up with three players that seemed like decent comps for him. Some of these may be too high of a ceiling for Gafford at this point in his career, but nonetheless, I'll throw them out at you. Clint Capela was one. I was seeing that multiple times around his draft grades, which kind of makes sense. Seems like athletic big who can run the floor, a guy who can catch lobs and dunk. So Capela might be a decent grade. One that I think is a little bit too high is Bam Adebayo. I think Bam coming out of college was way, way, way too underrated, and the Heat got a steal for him. But one that was kind of a throwback was Chris Anderson. That was one that I kept seeing come up the most. And Chris Anderson, yeah, Birdman, minus the meth selling.
Birdman.
Minus the meth selling, he had a 17-year career in the NBA. So if Gafford can, if he can emulate any of that in having a 10 or a 15-year career, I mean, Chris Anderson might be a decent comp. And he, if you remember how he played, he was rough. He could bang bodies around the rim and did sort of a lot of the things Gafford were seeing in spots do. So what do you think about any of those three comparisons?
Well, I mean, first off, most importantly, I didn't agree to the part where we're taking out the meth dealing. I'm pretty sure we got to leave that in there. We've got to leave that in there.
I think you have to live in Florida to do that.
Especially with the popularity of Tiger King right now, yeah, which I still have not watched. But those are interesting comps. I would say, obviously, in Bam and Clint Capela's cases, no one saw stardom there. I think both were surprises when they became as good as they did. Of course, you know, Roy Rogers, who's been brought in as a part of Boylan's staff, and we'll see whether or not he sticks around if the Bulls change Boylan out, but he was given a lot of credit for the development of Capella and some of the other young players on that Rockets team over the last couple of years before the Rockets shipped Capella off to go all in on their small ball. But, and then bam, like, much like Pascal Siakam's crazy trajectory last year, I feel like that is something similar that we have seen from Bam Adebayo this season. And part of the reason why that team is suddenly so, and perhaps unexpectedly, so damn good. So to say that I want to find a similarity there with Gafford to say, well, maybe nobody saw stardom, but look what they turned into. I mean, it's hard to predict that, but I would say based on the utilities that we see Gafford with right now, what he possesses athletically and from like a basketball mechanics standpoint, I would be surprised to see him make that big of a jump. I mean, it's possible, but I would say unlikely.
I'm with you too. I'm just looking at Bam's 3-year stats, and you know, we always talk about NBA players in that third year is really where you can see a jump. We talked about it with Kristaps Porzingis when we were comparing him and Lauri Markkanen back when Lauri was drafted, or even after his first season. And we were also talking about this too with Zach LaVine and Devin Booker in their third year jumps. And really, Bam makes that massive jump in this third year. He's an all-star this year. And also, what I find interesting is he switched positions too. I don't know if that was more the fact that he felt like he could play better at the power forward position as opposed to center, if he was switching off and it just seemed like he got more minutes there. Whatever the case may be, though, I mean, Bam doubled his points per game. He nearly doubled his defensive rebounds, nearly doubled his total rebounds, doubled his assists, doubled his steals, doubled his blocks, all in a matter of one season. The thing that makes me encouraged, though, even if he doesn't get to a ceiling of a Bam, which I don't expect at all, is that second season he was still playing only around 20 to 25 minutes a game and only averaging 8 to 9 points a game, too. So, and same thing with the rebounding. The rebounding was at 7 rebounds a game, but he was still playing the center position. So I'm curious if Gafford gets a little bit more run, feels a little bit more confident, gets a little bit stronger this offseason, if we're going to see numbers maybe similar to the year 2 projection of Bam. I don't know if he'll ever get to year 3, though, like the way that he was able to double his numbers this season. And again, credit to Bam. He's had a hell of a season. And look, it helps when you have guys like Jimmy Butler around you and you've got guys that can shoot like Tyler Hero. So all of that helps in combination with having a good big. So I don't know about the Chris Birdman Anderson one. The only thing I would say on that one is if he can have a longevity of a career at 15 or 17 seasons, I will take it. And if the majority are going to be here with the Bulls, and we got him young at 21 years old and Daniel Gafford, I will take that any day of the week.
But will he get a very eye-popping neck tattoo? That's what we got to figure that out.
And we got to get him a good nickname too. The Birdman is a good nickname.
The point that you made that I think is interesting about Bam is the switching of positions and, you know, playing a lot more power forward as opposed to center this season. That to me is a factor that you probably won't see Gafford ever benefit from. I don't see, given the talent the Bulls have now, any situation where Gafford plays power forward instead of center because of who the Bulls have. If there's one player who might get that luxury of, I think I can do more with my offensive game at power forward than center, so please let me do that at some point in the near future, it's Wendell Carter Jr., who is a lottery pick, who has said, I think I like playing power forward more than I like playing center. But again, then what happens with Lauri Markkanen? You got to figure out all that nonsense. But to me, like, there's, when you talk about Gafford and his versatility, the versatility to turn him into a power forward, especially with the other pieces the Bulls have right now and the way that the modern NBA functions, it's just not realistic. Like, I was watching, you know, game 5 of the Bulls-Knicks rewind last night. God bless NBC Sports Chicago for keeping us entertained. And I was just thinking, and I was talking to my brother about this, it's crazy how many bigs the Bulls had on that roster in 95-96. It was like, yeah, you had Michael, Scotty, Harper, Tony, Rodman. the key guys. Then you had a couple of white boys off the bench to shoot threes, a.k.a. Steve Kerr and Buechler. But then beyond that, it was like you had Longley, you had Bill Weddington, you had James Edwards, you had Josh Sally. It was like in the 90s, you could have six centers on your roster and be like, yeah, that's a proper number of centers. And then even beyond that, like the year later, they had Brian Williams, a.k.a. Bison Deli, and then they had Robert Parrish. Like all those 90s teams had a zillion centers on them. And in today's NBA, it's like, okay, you need like one or maybe two traditional centers. And that right now is, I think, all Gafford really is.
That's funny. Yeah, they had four considered centers. They had four of them on the roster. James Edwards, Jack Haley, Bill Weddington, and Luke Longley. And then, they had four power forwards on top of that.
Right. Right.
It's hilarious.
The 90s, man.
Yeah. And maybe we can get into this more when the Bulls start playing in the finals and we start doing the rewinds. But I have a bone to pick with anybody that was trash in the modern NBA. And after going back and watching some of these full game replays back in the 90s. But I want to hit back on your Carter point real fast. And this will probably wrap up our Gafford preview. You think there's a chance if Carter can come to some type of agreement with the Bulls front office, the coaching staff this season, to allow him to switch positions and go mainly to play power forward, do you think a combination of him and Gafford on the floor together would be something interesting that you would want to watch? Or do you think that would work at all? And I don't know, would that improve things? And maybe not in Boylan's system, but with a different coach to play two of those bigs at the same time. What do you think about those two guys getting an opportunity maybe to at least experiment playing next to each other?
Yeah, I think it's useful to try it out and see, because I think in that might be your window into seeing what Wendell shifting would look like. But again, the X factor here to me is Lauri Markkanen and fixing the catastrophically bad season he just had, because for all the hype about Wendell's ceiling, I still thought, based on what I saw from Wendell as a rookie and what I saw from him this year versus what I saw from Lowry in his first two seasons, Lowry's ceiling, if developed properly, is higher than Wendell's. And I know plenty of Bulls fans disagree with me on that, but to me, okay, well, let's play Gafford and Wendell together and see what that looks like. And, you know, play Wendell at the four, let him play the four and Gafford at the five. Okay, but what does that mean for Lauri Markkanen? Because fixing him, getting Jim Boylan as far the fuck away from him as possible, and fixing whatever is fundamentally broken about the player that we once knew to be Lauri Markkanen with this amazing potential in front of him is of the utmost importance to me. And it vastly outweighs the importance of, well, what if we played Gafford and Carter together in the front court?
Yeah, I was going to say, if you get to the point where you're playing Gafford and Carter at the same time, something clearly went wrong with Markkanen. Something clearly went wrong, whether you traded him, whether he's just not the player that you thought you were going to develop. Whatever the case may be, he's not the same player. And I think you already lose at that point. If you're already testing out Carter playing a different position, you're moving Gafford to the starting lineup, and you're moving Markkanen to the bench, or you trade Markkanen, I think you already lost. This rebuild is a complete disaster at that point. And I'm with you on the Carter versus Markkanen thing. We saw a really shitty season from Markkanen in year three. And this was, again, when we talk about year three, this was supposed to be that next step. But the amount of injuries that he's accumulated on top of the lack of confidence and the system that doesn't really fit the core player that you drafted in your first year after trading Butler, it's infuriating. It's infuriating as a fan, and I'm sure it is for Lauri Markkanen too. So I'm with you. I think that's the first and most important part, but who knows? Maybe we will see Gafford and Carter get some run if Carter's able to convince the Bulls front office to allow him to switch positions. But we'll talk about Carter in length sometime this week or next week. But I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls.
You know, Jordan, quick before we wrap up, as we were recording, there was an update about what we were talking about with this player's tourney for NBA 2K. This is from the Boardroom, which is, you know, Kevin Durant's like media company, that was just released while we were recording. It is official. Players only tournament. And the matchups have been set, and this will air starting this Friday, on ESPN. Here are the matchups real quick. No surprise that being his company, Kevin Durant gets the number one seed. But for your information, player seeding was based on their 2K ratings and their tenure in the league. So 1 versus 16, KD versus Derrick Jones Jr. 2 versus 15, Trae Young, who has a 90 rating on NBA 2K, versus Harrison Barnes, the 15th seed. Number 3, Hassan Whiteside versus number 14, Pat Beverly. Donovan Mitchell and Rui Hachimura in the 4 versus 13 matchup. Devin Booker versus Michael Porter Jr. in the 5 versus 12 matchup. Drummond versus Boogie Cousins in 6 versus 11. Our boy, the Bulls' shining star, Zach LaVine, taking on DeAndre Ayton in the 7 versus 10 matchup. And the Clippers' Montrezl Harrell going up against Sabonis Jr. in the 8-9 matchup.
Wow, interesting. I wonder if this is going to be a blacktop one-on-one, or if this is a, they're going to play with, like, the Zach LaVine's going to play with the Bulls, DeAndre Ayton's going to play with the Suns. If that's the case and they're going to play full right. games, this should be really damn interesting. But if it's a one-on-one, I can tell you right now, Zach LaVine can smoke DeAndre Ayton. Zach LaVine is a low-key, really, really fun player to play with in 2K, and his release and his touch are, it might be the easiest player to get used to in the game, so... that's cool, though. That is amazing. That's awesome that we've got a Bulls player playing in this. So we will definitely have to watch that and hear maybe some interesting stories from Zach LaVine as well. But I know his boy, too, Devin Booker, is playing in this. But some very, very interesting matchups. But Kevin Durant getting the number one seed, I think, is funny. Although he does have a 96 rating. So we will see.
I mean, yeah, but is his 2K player playing with a still... partially torn Achilles? Like, yeah. How's that work?
That's true. That is very true. Because right now, if you try to play like an online matchup, you can't use Kevin Durant. They take out all the injured players. So if you're trying to play with the Nets, you can't play with Kyrie Irving and you can't play with Kevin Durant. So that kind of sucks when guys... It's the only downfall or drawback to updated rosters every single day is sometimes you want to hop on there and play with one player and play online and you can't because the players aren't fucking available. So... I'm very excited for this, though. ESPN on Friday, this should take place. Very, very excited. So I guess with that, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Drop your text, your voicemails. We're going to do mailbag tomorrow and pick back up on our player reviews on Thursday. So you got a question for us, 331-979-1369. Drop your text, your voicemails, or you... can tweet at us. Wow, I have the hiccups during this. It's a great time to end the show with some hiccups. Tweet at us at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Peck. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com